Isso. Entrevista com Dietmar Offenhuber, 21 de maio de 2008. First of all, present yourself, tell me about your background and what have you been working on lately.
So, my name is Dietmar Offenhuber. My original background is architecture. Also during my architecture studies, I shifted more towards like virtual spaces and knowledge spaces compared to physical structures. After that, I've been working also for Ars Electronica, especially Ars Electronica Future Lab, where I've been mainly dealing with interactive exhibitions, with the conceptualization and realization. After that, I've been teaching animation and interactive media. And then I spent 2 years at the MIT Media Lab. And recently my focus is more on visualization of information and knowledge.
Yeah, when you mentioned knowledge space, could you explain a little bit more the notion you have of this term?
Well, there are a couple of things. I mean, first, in the whole field of visualization, you have like rough sub-disciplines. Like when people say, for example, scientific visualization, they usually mean the representation of concrete data, like let's say, medical images, things like that. Information visualization, on the other hand, deals more with abstract data, let's say financial or whatever. And knowledge visualization usually deals with semantic structures, with semantic space. So they deal with ontologies. How could you describe knowledge in a diagrammatic way? And since I'm coming from architecture, this like using space as an explanatory device has been always my center of work. So that you think of, you describe an issue by describing the space that it spans in an abstract or concrete way.
Which relation do you see between your work and other fields of knowledge?
It has been interdisciplinary from the beginning. So starting from architecture, it still has a lot of references and relations to the work that architects usually do, which is organizing things and in space. There's also other fields of knowledge. Many things play into that, like psychology of perception, the representation of knowledge, the design aspects, how to communicate things. Of course, also philosophical implications. How could you understand the process of knowledge acquisition?
So, who and what are your main references? Aesthetics, philosophics, related to these fields you have dialogue?
Philosophic, I would say the concepts of space that have been developed since the 17th century, and also the theories of diagram. In architecture, as I said, the way of organizing information or entities in space, but also the way of the approach to criticism and the overall design process are still very much influenced from the architectural practice. That's basically.
I forgot to ask if you were work now in practical projects
or yeah. Yeah, we are developing visualization strategies for media art archives. That's a project that started a couple of months ago and will keep on going for a couple of years. Yeah. And it deals with the Ars Electronica archive, but also other archives of media art, structuring knowledge and representing it in a visual way.
So, but you are not alone, you have group?
I'm directing the visualization track, so we are a small group.
Okay, but it's inside Ars Electronica?
No, it's it's an interdisciplinary research institute funded by the Art University, by Ars Electronica, and the Art Museum Lentos.
How is your work process from the creative process to the execution of the work?
I thought about that. I think it's mainly based on conversations with other people. So it's a very iterative design process. Since you can never abstract the user or the person who is interacting or using the systems, you have to also develop the your devices or your tools in a more conversational and iterative way.
Okay. And when you go to the practice, how it works?
We have this approach of designing through prototypes, that you don't only use the prototypes as a proof of concept, but rather as a device for defining concepts. That you start off with a prototype and use it as a basis for discussion in order to keep the process going.
And about the exhibition, you usually find the places to exhibit after you have the work ready, or while you are constructing, you are already looking for where to exhibit, or you produce for a specific exhibition places?
Concerning this question, when I worked for Ars Electronica, we designed many exhibitions locally in Austria, but also abroad. And during those exhibitions, I learned that it's extremely important to focus on the concrete space where you wanna that you are developing the exhibition for right from the beginning. So we worked many times with, for example, London-based architects, Land Design Studios, and they were extremely influential, but also, it was basically their main point to get involved right in the very beginning, even before a museum is designed. They would bring in aspects that are important for the exhibition and never see the building and the exhibition as something that is separated. I mean, I'm not saying that you have to construct a specific building for every exhibition, but there are special properties of space that every exhibition has to deal with, and so I would say it's extremely important to consider the space in terms of flows and entry, access, directions, visual access, things like that.
What are the relations between your work and the technology, the available technology, and in which ways they are part of your everyday work?
Yeah, to a bigger extent than I would wish, actually, since all the things have to be developed and programmed. This is, of course, a very important factor, time-wise and also content-wise. And yeah, it's something you have to deal with. Also, in a positive way, and especially when I, for example, look at the young generation of media artists or digital artists, very often they come from a technical education in the first place. They have like a bachelor in engineering, and because of that, they have a very natural way of working with technology and incorporating it into the conceptual, into the concept of the work. So, in the end, you have to, treat technology as a, basically as a matter or as a material that is often complicated, but you have to deal with it.
But usually in your works, how, which part of the work you realize, like on YouTube, like you are a programmer, or you invite other people to do something you are not able to do?
Yeah, that's hard to say in general. I mean, usually mostly conceptual, but I also get involved with implementations of like prototypes in order to communicate what I wanna put to discussion. And to some degree I'm also programming, but of course it takes away a lot of time and it brings in a completely different mindset. So when you're like immersed into a development process, you're not really able to function in any other way, so it's often not possible.
Okay. And what do you have to say about media labs and spaces for exhibitions of interactive art with digital bases? And I want to know your opinion, maybe critical opinion, since the organization of these institutions still the sponsorship.
I think they are mainly places around which a community forms, and so if this works well, then they can really multiply the effects and the power of this community. In the first generation of media labs, the focus was very heavy on construction and development. For example, the Ars Electronica Future Lab had this argument that they can offer technology that individual artists cannot afford, so they have the cave, they have virtual reality systems. So that was their main justification, that they have all this technology and they have the knowledge to develop these projects, and therefore the artists would assemble there. Now this aspect is completely gone because it's not necessary to, technology is cheap and ubiquitous. So the new media labs are often organized as a hybrid of an educational workshop, but also exhibition space where you would develop things in a workshop structure, then add a small exhibition like iBeam or Media Lab in Madrid or Laboral. And yeah, I think that's the appropriate way to do it right now. It's more like.
How do you see the interactor's whole? What you didn't say about the sponsorship.
Sponsorship, yeah. I mean, of course, when you, in terms of sponsorship, I mean, in a pragmatic way, you have to take whatever you can get, and sort of, let's say, the East European countries and Balkan, there was George Soros, often the main source of funding, who would fund labs for 3 to 5 years, and then money is gone, and often the labs would close, but sometimes some of them would find other ways of sponsorship. And yeah, in Austria you still have funding through the government, but also private sponsors. I mean, I wouldn't say the one thing, the one approach is better than the other.
Do you see difference in this? In the kind of production?
It depends. I mean, not necessarily on a structural basis. I wouldn't say that you are more free if you're funded through government money, because, I mean, there's also a lot of influence, like be it political or bureaucratic. And sometimes private sponsors are just happy to see their logo on the on the flyers and on the exhibition, and they wouldn't like intervene with any of the content. But sometimes it's also the other way around. So it's if you wanna start an initiative and get a project running, you just have to get all the sources that you can get, and you would never like turn down one just because it's either the one or the other, but only for individual reasons that are like related to this very individual sponsorship. Yeah.
Mm. How do you see the interactors holding the work you develop?
I mean, it's of course they are central. I mean, that's obvious to a certain degree, but in the development process they are often not, because of the way the development design process works. Conferences about interactive technologies like CHI require you to do evaluation, user testing and things like that, and most researchers are stressed out by that, because the paper gets ready one day before the deadline, and then you have to do some sort of evaluation. So that's quite a tough question, how to incorporate the visitor, the interactor, in the design process. Sometimes I think it's not necessary. I mean, this sounds very provocative, but I think sometimes it's really the best thing if you have a very clear concept to communicate this concept, and then if the users don't like it, then okay, yeah, it's at least a concept that has been communicated and there's a part for discussion. But incorporating user tests at a very early stage and changing features based on evaluation results doesn't necessarily make a project better, but of course in the end it will be the only criteria for the success of the project. So that's the thing you have to deal with.
It's a kind of paradox.
It's in a way a paradox. It's a paradox. I think one way of the paradox is also in the way how interaction with artworks works, and on the other hand doesn't work, because there is no way of like make, there's no criteria for like, let's say, intuitive interface other than familiarity, what people have used before, what people have seen before, and of course, you know, all these issues of malleable interfaces, that like how smooth is the process of interaction and all that stuff. But I think in the end it all comes down to familiarity, and of course this is not a this is something that changes. So if people are familiar with something, then they would be able to use it in a better way.
Do you see relations between your work process structure in the social system you live in, and if yes, which are they?
I mean, the social system, first among the people involved with the work, certainly yes, since, as I said before, that this iterative process, which is very much based on conversation and dialogue, is the main mode of working. This touches the whole topic of interdisciplinarity, which is also a little bit tricky. It works much less than people would think it works, and there are two main reasons. The first, the obvious reason that is always stressed, is the different mode of
in dem Stock vielleicht bei im Büro von die von dem Maler.
Okay. Das ist da und weg.
Okay.
You were saying that was a little bit tricky.
Interdisciplinary work. I mean, the main thing is that it's not only the methods that you use for research and evaluation. The bigger thing, or the main thing, is the definition of success in different disciplines, which is different. So even if the interdisciplinary process works perfectly and flawlessly and you get a result that everyone is happy with, not every discipline necessarily can use this success to the same extent, because there are also outside expectations that are formed in a certain community. And in my experience, this is the most difficult thing in interdisciplinary work. So this would be also the relation to the whole social system, if we say social system in terms of, let's say, academic circles, design circles, audience, visitors. So you have different ways of seeing or judging the work.
So I want to make an extra question with this. If you want to create a course today in your field, what would you prioritize? Considering all those questions you're talking about.
That's a good question, yeah. Yeah, I mean, what I just talked about, the interdisciplinary process, I think this is something that should be stressed more also in the educational field, but it never has been done right because of the structures of academic programs, and so there is no culture of working together and adopting other points of view. So I think this would be one priority, also given, you know, all the influences of, let's say, technology and design theory and so on. I think I also wouldn't, another problem that I would identify is this, the self-containment of so-called new media art. It doesn't, there is no dialogue between technology-based art and contemporary art, much, much less than you would expect. So I think those are things that would need to be stressed.
Could you say a little bit more, do you have some ideas that why this separation happens?
Yeah, because each field is very complex in itself, so you have to deal with this complexity, and while doing that, your judgment also changes. And I mean, there are ways of dealing with that. The American system, as I saw it at MIT, was in some ways very inspiring to me, because people don't see you as, don't respect you only if you have been doing the same thing for 20 years, but they respect you more if you have done many different things. And this is also something that is a very integral part of the undergraduate education, that you always have to choose two foci, and you will, when you finish your undergrad degree, you will already know a lot about interdisciplinary work and transdisciplinary work, and this interesting thing is that it's the opposite thing of specialization. Yeah. So, in Austria, you get new academic programs for very small niche. Genres, fields of knowledge, and when I remember from MIT, they don't even have a main computer science department. It's called electrical engineering and computer science, and some universities even just call it engineering. So they're like very general, but the people would specialize on an individual basis. So I think this was something that I thought was very interesting.
In your work, do you see relations between space and energy? And yes, how do they take shape?
If I think about what I'm working on right now, I think the relationship between space and narrative is the main the main concept of the diagram. So a diagram tries to explain something through spatial relations, and I'm interested in topics of like visual rhetorics or spatial rhetorics. How could you use spatial relationships in order to get a certain message across, or to the relationship of space and language, and space and speech. But if you say rhetorics, it would be even more narrow and more directed compared to language in general, because you wanna like convince somebody of something, or how those mechanisms work concerning space and the diagram, I think, is a very interesting field.
Do you have some examples of other groups that also work with this in a lecture, for example?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that in architecture during the 90s there was a very strong interest in those topics, but it somehow disappeared completely, at least in my perception. Because right now, the main focus is on fabrication and things like that.
Liebeskind maybe.
Yes, but you know, this is an older generation, so Liebeskind is from this like early 90s group of architects. And
nowadays, you said it's...
Yeah, nowadays people are
empty. It's empty, it's filled.
I mean, there's not so much interest in the general or virtual space and general concepts of space, but there's much more emphasis on materiality, on patterns, materials, ways like craft. There's you know, craft. This is the big topic, and fabrication methods, personal fabrication, and these things, which is obviously very important if you wanna really build architecture. But at the same time, I saw very interesting approaches, let's say at the end of the 90s, that have been neglected, that would offer much more, but people are not so much concerned with that anymore. So for example, the whole space syntax research around the City College in London. Yeah, the Sensible City group does some work in that area quite successfully, so they are one exception. And yeah, also in Japan there's a lot of research about environmental psychology and how spaces are the like performative aspects of space. And of course, I mean, in philosophy, this is one of the main things at the moment, this performative theory and so.
I have a question. When you were talking about space and narrative issues, you said you think it's focused on the diagram. Mm-hmm. What are you...
In my case, yeah.
Yeah, but what are you calling diagram in your case?
A diagram would be, for me, a visual representation of an abstract meaning, knowledge, let's say. I just use the word as a general way of describing knowledge through visual means. Of course, I mean, I guess the term is generally used or is more narrowly defined than that. But just for the lack of a better term.
So I think that's all. Do you have something else to say concerning all these issues?
I think it's... If there are like research questions, I think it's really hard to answer all of them in the same research. Each question is a huge field on its own. That's something to deal with. Maybe it's really, I mean, it's of course like fundamental research to get an overview of the field, it's good to do that. Mm-hmm. But I guess at some point you should just like pick one thing that you think is really like also where your answers that you got to the interviews are. And yeah, but I think it's a great topic. Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.